Live from our nation's capital.
All talk here in Washington, D.C. turns to President-elect Joe Biden's administration. Speaker Pelosi has beat the political odds and reclaimed the gavel. We're talking right now about 2024 jockeying amongst Republicans.
Bloomberg Sound Off. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
Biden has promised again and again that he will unite the country.
The only way things happen is if Republicans and Democrats work together.
Unfortunately for President-elect Biden, this is a time when he's getting the most support he's going to get in the Democratic Party.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg Radio.
Trial watch for President Donald J. Trump. When will the impeachment trial begin in the Senate? I'm going to interview Congresswoman Nancy Mace, a Republican from South Carolina who voted against impeaching President Trump while also saying that he bears responsibility. Don't miss that interview this hour. Plus, we're also going to talk about President-elect Joe Biden. He has a $1.9 trillion economic stimulus plan. What's inside of it? I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. We begin tonight with the big story, and it is President-elect Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion economic stimulus plan. Let's dive into the Bloomberg terminal and just get right to the top line view. President-elect Joe Biden will seek to increase the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour as part of his $1.9 trillion pandemic relief bill, a move that could complicate its passage through the closely divided U.S. Senate. Meanwhile, he is also calling for there to be $350 billion in state aid and $160 billion for vaccines and more testing. Again, President-elect Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion pandemic relief package includes lifting the minimum wage to $15 an hour and $350 billion in state aid, $160 billion for vaccines. I'm joined by my colleague, Laura Davison, Bloomberg Tax and Congress reporter. Laura, break down the details.
This is basically twice the size of that stimulus package we saw pass in December. And remember, this is Biden's opening bid to the Congress. They need Republicans and Democrats to pass this. So some of those things, you know, that $350 billion in state aid, $15 minimum wage, those are things that we're likely to see Republicans chip away at as they come to a final agreement here. Some other things that are really big in this, those $2,000 checks. Basically, what Biden is proposing here is they said, look, we got $600 in the last bill, you'll get $1,400 this time. They're also looking at expanding unemployment benefits. So that December stimulus bill put them through mid-March. They're calling to put that through the end of September so people have a little bit more cushion there as unemployment remains low.
Laura, would there be another stimulus check for families?
Yeah, that would be that $1,400 check that could go out, you know, as soon as Congress were to pass this bill. You know, last time they got those payments out, you know, within just a couple days of President Trump signing that into law, they could do the same this time. You know, the Biden administration is eyeing February or March for passage for this bill.
Laura, stay with us. I want to bring into this conversation Jeannie Sean Zeno, who is an Iona College professor and a Bloomberg Politics contributor. She is also the author of American Democracy in Crisis. Jeannie, you know, we're talking with Laura Davison, our colleague, about what's in President-elect Joe Biden's plan. Coming up, we're going to check in with Congresswoman Nancy Mace. And Republicans like Congresswoman Mace are going to have a hard time voting to raise the minimum wage. And, you know, it's going to be a fascinating debate that this country is going to have about the minimum wage, Jeannie.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was fascinated when Laura said, you know, I think the $15 minimum wage, also she mentioned the $350 billion for state aid, because, of course, this is something that just a few weeks ago, which seems a long time ago now, the Republicans had been balking at, and that had held up passage of the last bill, the amount of state aid. So, you know, I think those two things are just the tip of the iceberg. And Laura, I would love to ask you, who do you think Biden has to watch in terms of moderate defectors? You know, I think, you know, Joe Manchin is at the top of the list, of course, but are there other potential moderate Democrats that he could lose on something this sort of ambitious?
You know, there's several to watch here. You know, anyone who's been kind of big on the deficit here could be an issue or facing, you know, tough re-elections in states like Ohio or elsewhere that this is going to be an issue. The other thing, too, to consider is that he also, as he's negotiating with Republicans, really the issue is getting on, 10 Republicans, is do you keep your progressives happy? Your Bernie Sanders, your Elizabeth Warrens, if you're scaling back a lot of these, the $15 minimum wage, that's been a rallying cry for Bernie Sanders for many years, are you able to keep them on board, or do they see this as their opportunity to finally get some of these more progressive policies pulled together and they decide to withhold their vote, and that makes it a super tricky balancing act for Biden going forward.
It was so difficult to see how long it took for lawmakers to get the last round of economic stimulus passed across the finish line. Laura Davison just making a brilliant point in terms of the Republicans who are concerned about the national debt. We've got sound on the economy earlier today from Fed Chairman Jay Powell, and Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said that he was optimistic about the U.S. economy over the next couple of years when he spoke at Princeton University earlier. But he and his colleagues said that they still believe that they're going to have to continue to keep interest rates near zero at least through 2023. We've got sound on this. Here it is.
We're no longer going to raise interest rates just because, for example, if unemployment were to be well below our current estimates of the natural rate of unemployment, that wouldn't be a reason to raise interest rates unless we see troubling inflation or other imbalances.
Adam Goodman's also with us. He is a Republican media strategist, columnist, and partner at Ballard Partners in Washington, D.C. Adam, I mean, will folks in your party be able to vote on a $1.9 trillion stimulus, or is this just a no way, no how vote?
Well, I do think there is going to be a vote that will be supported by Republicans as well as Democrats on stimulus. But it's interesting, Jeannie's question was point on about which ones to watch, basically, that may, hold the balance of power in terms of whether this moves forward or not. But look at it this way. There are two different kinds of propositions in Congress. One is what I call gestures and gambits, which is throw something out there and show where your heart is, not really expecting that that's going to be the final play. Or, things that really are priorities to pass as is. So the $15 minimum wage, that to me is a gesture and a gambit in terms of where Democrats would like to move, but I don't think there's a realistic chance if they want to have Republicans joining this package on stimulus that itself is going to hold water, as opposed to the $2,000, which obviously even Donald Trump was trying to push in the last days of the last stimulus. So I think we're going to have a stimulus package. I think it's going to be more directed to individuals than the last one was, which is really good and important news. But the minimum wage and other things, I think those are opening arguments about where philosophically the Democrats in particular in the House and Senate would like America to move. But I don't think bottom line they expect passage.
Yeah, and it's so fascinating, Adam, because listening to you, it's a reminder, I think, to all of us that unlike the current president, Joe Biden knows Congress. He knows the Senate. So when you're talking about, this opening gambit, this trial balloon, pushing out what he would hope to get, but not what he actually may expect or they expect to get, I think we're in for sort of a fascinating ride in terms of the work that Kevin, you and Laura do covering Congress, because, this is a president who knows this institution and he knows how this is done. He was there during the 2008-2009 stimulus. This is 50% bigger by, I guess, some estimations. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out.
Well, and the magic number, folks, if you're playing at home, is 10. Democrats will need at least 10 Republican votes in the Senate in order to get the bill through. Now, Laura Davison, I mean, let's dive into the weeds here. Anytime you lump minimum wage in with an economic stimulus bill, it's going to have to go through what's known as budget reconciliation, where you need a majority. So is President-elect Biden even able, Laura, to get this $1.9 trillion bill through at once, or is the minimum wage element of it going to be a bargaining chip?
So if he's able to get 10 Republicans, if he has 60 votes in the Senate, he doesn't have to use budget reconciliation, and that means he can move everything all together. The logistics are a lot less complicated. If he doesn't have those 60 votes and he decides to do this just with Democrats, That's when it becomes a problem. Some of the stuff in here, you know, tax credits, stimulus checks, those can be moved through budget reconciliation, but there's a lot of concern that some of the other items, you know, money for schools, things related to testing programs and other policy issues, it would be difficult to move that through budget reconciliation. Also, you know, the $15 minimum wage as well. So that's why the administration has said that they want to use, you know, do it, make it a bipartisan bill, move it that way versus having to deal with all of the headaches that come with budget reconciliation.
All right. So for everyone who is in their car and saying, what? I wasn't paying attention to Schoolhouse Rock. Laura Davison, quickly and briefly and simply explain embrace the Schoolhouse Rock live audience as what is budget reconciliation?
It is this fun little quirk in Congress land that allows Congress to basically pass the Senate to pass a bill with a simple majority versus that normal 60 vote threshold they need. So that means that, you know, one party could pass a bill. They get to do it once a year, but it has to relate strictly to budget spending revenues. So it's not a catch-all. It's a little loophole, but there are some limits to it.
The things you learn. Laura Davison, thank you so much for all of your excellent reporting, my friend, this past week, and of course, on an important economic day as well. Coming up, we're going to check in with the latest on the impeachment trial and what's going on in Washington, D.C. The panel's going to stay with me, Jeannie Shino and Adam Goodman, nobody better than them. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. Fun fact, I was in the 8th grade school play, Schoolhouse Rock Live. This is Bloomberg.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg Radio.
I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio, joined by Professor Jeannie Shan Zeno, Bloomberg Politics contributor, author of the new book that just arrived at my place yesterday, Jeannie, American Democracy in Crisis, and I cannot wait to read it this weekend and talk about it with you over the next couple of weeks once I get through with it. Very excited. Congratulations on the new book, Jeannie.
And I'm still reeling by what I just learned about you, Kevin.
What did you learn about me, Jeannie?
I'm
a man of many layers.
You really are.
I'm not that dense. Go ahead.
You starred in Schoolhouse Rocks as a child.
Well, and I did.
I'm just waiting and waiting if at some point you will regale us with some songs from I'm Just a Bill, my favorite.
I will spare everyone with this. But I will tell you a fun fact about Schoolhouse Rock is that it was created by David McCall, who was an executive at the advertising firm McCaffrey and McCall, and he noticed that he had a kid who couldn't remember anything about multiplication, but he knew all the words to the Rolling Stones. So he created this show to sell civics and education to American kids. And Jeannie, as a professor, I wonder, you know, here we are at a time in which, you know, there's 20,000 troops in Washington, D.C. There's such a breakdown in civil discourse. Everyone would agree on that. You almost wonder if it's time to relook at how civics is taught in America.
Absolutely. And he certainly is a man after my own heart. We still play those for students, you know, because it is meaningful to all of them. But no, absolutely. We have to do a much better job. A lot of this has to do with funding. A lot of this has to do with, you know, how teachers are compensated, how they are trained, the many, many things they're asked to do in the classroom besides the content of what they're teaching. So there's a whole host of things that goes into it. But we in the education have to do better. We in the media have to do better in terms of having constructive conversations about these things.
I'm not going to let Adam Goodman, a Republican strategist, media strategist and columnist and partner at Ballard Partners in Washington, even get to dig into whether or not there is videotape of me on the Schoolhouse Rock live stage as an 11-year-old singing Conjunction Junction, Adam. So I'm going to move on back to the big story, which is, of course, whether or not Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is going to hold an impeachment trial in the Senate. And it's looking like that will not happen until after President-elect Joe Biden is sworn in. I gleaned from a source today that now openly being discussed in Republican circles is whether or not that trial has to start right after the inauguration, or whether or not it could wait a month, 2 months until the spring to allow there to be more distance from an incredibly tense time in American politics. But we've got sounds on this from Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, who spoke earlier today as armed National Guard troops roamed the Capitol after the House voted yesterday 232 to 197 to impeach President Trump. Here she is.
In a bipartisan way, the House demonstrated that no one is above the law, not even the President of the United States.
Meanwhile, President Trump releasing his second video condemning the violence in last week's breach of the Capitol building, while also saying that he should not have been impeached. We've got sound on that. Roll the tape.
Now I am asking everyone who has ever believed in our agenda to be thinking of ways to ease tensions, calm tempers, and help to promote peace in our country.
Adam Goodman, as someone who is very familiar with the currents of conservatism and where the party is, what do you think the vacuum in party leadership right now will move? Will they be able to unify around any type of strategy for an impeachment trial, or is it every vote in the Senate for themselves?
Well, this is one of those situations where you really wish that leaders would emerge and would just do the right thing. Stop, instead of playing the partisan card or reveling in rhetoric that has as its bottom line inflaming one part of America and trying to reinforce a base in another, what you really want are people to step up. What they're talking about right now in terms of a trial is a trial that might begin, some have speculated, might begin on Inauguration Day. Look, the one thing that President-elect Biden probably wishes would go away is talk like that. And by the way, I want to compliment the President-elect. I think his statements over the last week in particular have been measured. They've been presidential. They really played to our better instincts. I don't feel the same about the Speaker of the House or the incoming Majority Leader of the Senate. You think there's still some kind of gain to be won here by vindictive volley. I don't see that. And the more time that's spent, Kevin, arguing the past, which is going to soon be President Donald Trump, in favor or at the expense of pushing for the present, where you have Joe Biden now trying to get out of the box quickly. You talk about the 100 days, how important the first 100 days are in laying out your agenda, getting something big or big things happening. All those days can be lost by some kind of return to trying to retry a case that's already been tried and settled in the minds of Americans one way or the other. I'm hoping and praying that we don't do that, that we move forward, that there isn't some drawn-out trial, that there is no trial. They just think the suggestion there should be a censure, perhaps, a measure that's voted on. That's appropriate, and that, to me, says America's ready to move forward, as opposed to we're stuck in the reruns of some Law and Order show that doesn't seem to want to stop.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Panel's going to stay with me. Coming up next, we're going to be joined. Do you hear what they did? Jeannie, do you hear that?
I do. Thank you, Christine. Love it.
I lost my train of thought. I'm speechless. Christine Baratta, REP, I'm speechless. Coming up, Congresswoman Nancy Mace, a Republican from South Carolina. This is Bloomberg. I'm Kevin Cirilli, and we are following multiple developments this evening, including the unveil of President-elect Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion economic stimulus bill. But Washington, D.C., a totally different city tonight, as 20,000 troops have arrived in Washington, D.C. to protect the nation's capital ahead of the inauguration next week. I'm joined by Congresswoman Nancy Mace. She is a Republican from South Carolina's 1st Congressional District. Congresswoman, thank you so much for making the time for our program. What is it like to be an elected official this week in Washington with such a heavy troop presence and the city looking entirely differently than it did just a week ago?
It's unreal. In fact, I never, ever thought I would see, I've never seen anything like it. And the heightened awareness that we all have. There are many members of Congress that have received threats over the last few days and weeks, And we've had threats to our Capitol. Obviously, the violence of last week where five people died. I've never seen anything like it, and I hope to never see anything like the destruction we saw on the 6th ever again.
Do you feel, Congresswoman, that the nation's capital and state capitals around the country are protected? And what have you been assured, and what can be done?
Right. Well, certainly the U.S. Capitol is more protected today than it ever has been. Very sadly, it's heartbreaking for me to see 20,000 troops there trying to protect our Capitol. There are threats on our Capitol, as I am sure that there are threats on other state capitals across the country. I never thought I would see anything like it. It's heartbreaking to see this is where we are in our country. But the divisiveness that's been going on, and last Wednesday, the 6th, was not the first time we've seen violence this year. We've seen it all across the country. And I gave my first speech on the floor yesterday, and pleading with my colleagues, both on both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, to take a deep breath, take a step back, and one, acknowledge that we have a problem with divisiveness in this country. We have a problem with rhetoric. Recognize we have a problem. And then number two, take responsibility for what's transpired over the last few months and last week on the 6th especially. I've been holding my party accountable, holding the president accountable very strongly over the last 10 days. And then third, stop being part of the problem and start being part of the solution. We have real challenges in this country on top of COVID, our economy, getting people back to work, getting our kids back to school. We need to be able to focus on those issues so we can recover from this pandemic, so people can get back to work and we can educate our children. But instead, we've been distracted by the violence that's hit our nation's capital. And it's so disheartening to see. And I want to be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
Congresswoman Mace, you voted against impeaching President Trump, but you also have been incredibly critical of President Trump and saying that he bears responsibility. What should the consequences be? What should the consequences be for his actions?
Yeah, well, my issue with impeachment is, number one, the House has every right to impeach the president of the United States, and I do hold him accountable and responsible for the events that transpired on the 6th of January. But the problem with the impeachment that was done this week is how political it was. It threw out due process, and no matter how guilty you think someone is, if we set the precedent that there is no due process, that's a terrible precedent to set in a country that respects the rule of law. And so, and secondly, impeachment won't even get to the U.S. Senate until the 19th of January. Biden's being sworn in on the 20th. So what have we accomplished here? There was a bipartisan, bicameral effort to censure the president, to hold him accountable, potentially to prohibit him from the resolutions that I read, prohibit him from holding office again. And that was supported by Republicans and Democrats in both chambers. But Speaker Pelosi wouldn't have any of it. She wouldn't bring it up to the floor for a debate or a vote. Or anything. And so that, to me, was also telling that impeachment was more political than practical, and there was another option on the table, and it was just entirely ignored.
So what should the consequence be now that he has been impeached, that the Senate is likely going to take it up? What do you hope happens in the judicial process, Congresswoman Mace, in the Senate? I know you're in the House, but what do you think the best course of action should be then?
Well, regardless, right now, when the Senate does take it up, I hope that matters are investigated to the fullest extent of the law. And I also not only is it the President of the United States, but there are other members of Congress and folks that spoke at the rally that have incited violence with their language over the last several weeks since the election. I think everyone that was potentially involved and incited this riot should be investigated to the fullest extent of the law. That's very important to this country, to our democracy.
Congresswoman Nancy Mace is with us. She's a Republican from South Carolina's 1st Congressional District, newly elected into Congress. Imagine that, starting a new job, and this is the first
the hell
week
of a time to start a new job.
Exactly. Yeah. She is the she graduated magna cum laude from the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina, and of course she was the first female to graduate from that program in 1999, and the book that she chronicles her experience in has received widespread praise, The Company of Men, A Woman at the Citadel. Jeannie Zeno, I mean, you hear this position coming from Congresswoman Mace, really making a new path in terms of a Republican position, Jeannie Zeno.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such an honor to talk to you, Representative. I heard your remarks on the floor, and congratulations about being your sworn in the other day. Seems like a lifetime ago, I'm sure. But
yeah.
I wanted to just I wanted to ask you, as you look ahead, and you know, we're expecting soon to hear about a $1.9 trillion package from Joe Biden being announced in the next few minutes, next couple hours. Do you think that your party can get to that kind of agreement with the incoming president on something that big? Or what are your thoughts in terms of what you're hearing about what he's going to propose tonight?
This is the first I've heard of it, so I have not seen it. I just started to hear it trickle out in the news. I will certainly take a look at the text once the package is released. By and large, overall, particularly since January 6th, it is incumbent upon the Republican Party to work with the Biden administration as an act of goodwill to find ways in which we can work together to move this country forward. We've got to have a peaceful transition of power, and we need to ensure that Republicans and Democrats are working together. The American people are counting on us. We have to do it today more than ever. But in regards to the new package, any new package should be targeted really towards those who particularly need it, small businesses that have been shut down, helping with payrolls so that people who want to work and can work can get back to work. Stimulus checks are another way that we can help Americans who are out of work. But we certainly shouldn't be doing it for Americans that haven't been impacted negatively by COVID. So, for example, I mean, technically I would qualify for a stimulus check, but my earnings weren't affected by COVID. My earnings were affected because I decided to run for Congress, right? that was my choice. It wasn't, the pandemic, but the last package had those making $75,000 a year getting a stimulus check, regardless, particularly if they were not affected by COVID. I think we've got to be very targeted and specific because we don't have the money, right? Our country's run out of money, and our debt and deficit are enormous right now. So I do support extending unemployment benefits for those who are out of work through no fault of their own. But the one thing we've got to be careful of is that we don't continue to
incentivize unemployment. We're going to have to leave it there. Congresswoman Mace, come back anytime. Thank you so much. I'm Kevin Cirilli. This is Bloomberg.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg Radio.
I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. Coming up tomorrow, Congressman Dwight Evans, Democrat from Pennsylvania. With me now, Professor Jeannie Shanzano, Bloomberg Politics contributor, author of the new book that is American Democracy in Crisis. American Democracy in Crisis is the new book, and I can't wait to read it, and I will tell everybody once I get through it. And Adam Goodman, Republican media strategist, columnist, and partner at Ballard Partners in Washington. Adam, you were listening to my and Jeannie's conversation with Congresswoman Mace. It's interesting, the politics of her position of voting not for impeachment but still placing blame on President Trump, and also getting in there that she doesn't think he should run again. Is that nuance going to work?
I think it is. First of all, I want to compliment Nancy Mace for words of class and grace, which we really need more of, and from both sides of the aisle. And maybe it takes more freshmen, frankly, coming into the process that aren't influenced or jaded by the past to really start to give you a kind of a breath of fresh air. And I hope there are a lot of Nancy Maces on the Republican side and similar people on the Democratic side that are going to start to see that the way forward is not left or right. It's just simply forward. And whatever it takes to get there, so much the better. I do want to say, by the way, about Jeannie and her book, can't wait to read it also, that if we do not go that way, she may have to quickly pen the second book to go beyond the first book, which is called American Democracy Still in Crisis. Right?
The sequel. I don't want a sequel. Listen, there's 20,000 troops here. I don't want a sequel, Jeannie Zeno.
Yeah. What? Yeah, Adam, it's so true. I hope I don't have to pen that one, but if I do, I'm going to look to you and Kevin to support me.
As you, Adam, navigate through, though, the future of the Republican Party, and I think you made a really interesting point about new members. I mean, there is a hunger, especially amongst the business community, and not just the C-suite, but also just, folks who are just looking for not even a return to normal, just a return to get moving again. How does the Republican Party blaze that path forward? Because quite honestly, talking to aides all day today on the left and the right, but I'll focus on the right for today. When I talk to them, they're saying, look, 75 million Americans did not rush the Capitol and break the law, and millions of Americans who voted for President Trump feel that he was way, way over the line, to put it mildly, and they still believe in lower taxes, for example, Adam Goodman. And they just want a leader.
That's it. If this were a referendum, frankly, on policy as opposed to persona, this actually may have even had a different result this election this past November. But I'm a student of history, so I really believe that things repeat themselves for reasons that are fairly obvious. History says that in 2022, the first midterm under President-elect Biden, that we are going to see a loss of seats by the Democrats. Obama lost 63 House seats. Bill Clinton lost 52. Obama also, by the way, in his first midterm, saw a loss of 3 seats in the Senate. So if you believe in history, you think first that Republicans have a very good chance of recapturing the House, which has a margin of less than 10 seats now, and recapturing possibly control of the Senate. They already have a very favorable Supreme Court. That would put them in very good positions. Also something I think that President-elect Biden is looking at very closely as a kind of an instruction manual on how to come out of the box, knowing that that may be a possibility. He doesn't want that to be something that creates a full stop to everything he's trying to do. Beyond that, you've got a very deep bench of Republicans after 22 that will seek the presidency in 24. And you go down the list, the familiar names, of course, Nikki Haley, Rick Scott, Tim Scott, Marco Rubio, and not as familiar names like Greg Abbott and Tom Cotton, Larry Hogan of Maryland. So you have a deep bench, a good bench. If you're looking at a policy-driven candidacy more than one driven by personality, not to minimize that, by the way, the Republicans are going to have a lot to choose from. And America will have a tremendous choice to make at that point. But I'm very bullish on the party. Every cycle when a party suffers losses on one front or all fronts, you see the normal obituaries. Oh my gosh, the Democrats are done. Oh geez, this time Republicans can't come back. Always, it seems 2 years later, there's a 180 and suddenly there's a new spin on things. But the one thing I hope we move forward on together is as a country. And I'm hoping that those who are just slightly right of center and left of center in both the House and the Senate actually start to foment a new kind of dynamic in moving the business of America forward. It doesn't depend on leaders that are too beholden to the far left and the far right, and more into the interests of average Americans.
Yeah, and Adam, can I just follow up on that? Because you make a really important point. I think in all of the chaos of the last week or so, we've sort of lost sight of the fact that Republicans actually did much better than expected in many races in November, including the House races, and certainly at the state and local level. So if you think about that, and then Kevin just made such an important point about, so many Republicans who may not like the personality of the current president or the tweeting, but they really are fiscal conservatives. How do, Republicans in Congress, looking at this bill come from the Democrats and the Biden administration, how do they thread that needle, addressing a pandemic and the economic crisis we're in, but also maintaining their sort of focus on, we want to make sure that we are fiscally responsive. Nancy Mace was just talking about the debt and the deficit and targeted packages. So how do you recommend they do that?
That's a great question. Here's the almost too short answer. They don't make it personal. That Republicans move forward with the purpose of the country first. And as long as they do that and they stick more to policy than they do, the prickliness of politics, they have a lot of room to play here. And America's watching. I think it was a big mistake that we didn't come out with a bigger stimulus that went to individuals in the last stimulus package. It's a big mistake. I mean, if anyone directly needs the help and needs it now, you still see the jobless numbers. It's them and small business. That should be the business of America. So if Republicans can avoid the red meat, which too often drives the rhetoric of politics, but doesn't do much good for the interests of America, I think
Well, and the suburbs have turned vegetarian, so they're not even wanting the red meat. But they are. I mean, they don't want the red meat anymore. It doesn't even resonate nearly as much, I think, as a lot of these focus groups even think. Let me put it to you this way, to both of your points. I mean, I got to be candid. I was talking to one of the leaders behind the Millennial National Debt Advocacy Group, and they were saying they were even behind the last round of economic stimulus. Adam Goodman, I don't think Republicans are going to be able to get on board with a $15 minimum wage. The Republicans that I talked to are going to say, you're telling us the restaurant can't be open right now, and now you're telling us that we need to pay them more hourly. They are hurting. This is such a mess, Adam, in terms of the debate that's coming.
That's it. That's totally it. By the way, I liked your vegetarian comment. That was
I'm not a vegetarian. My uncle has a hoagie shop, and I love a good cheesesteak. Go ahead.
That was so beautifully timed. no, you're absolutely right. They're not going to go for the $15 minimum wage, but it gives them more room to actually be there for the $2,000 stimulus checks to individuals and to stand tall for small business, and you're totally right. The last thing small business needs right now is more regulation and higher costs at a time when many of them are just struggling to keep the doors open, and more importantly, to keep Americans employed. So I think Republicans as well as Democrats are going to be there on the basic stimulus package. They will not be able to find critical mass on minimum wage. But as I said earlier in the show, I think that's just kind of an opening gambit that Democrats want to show to their base, maybe, that they really mean business somewhere downstream. But frankly, that's the kind of business I think that has a very small chance, if any, of passing a more bipartisan Congress.
Yeah, and Adam, like when as you watch Joe Biden make the statement tonight and release his and we're hearing signs of what it may include. In addition to, you know, the 2000 stimulus, the 14 would be 1400 now, but it seems like the state aid, the minimum wage, those are sort of the two big things that Republicans may object to. But what else do you think that you're hearing that they may object to in terms of what the vice president may suggest tonight?
Well, I think they're when you talk about state aid, you're thinking state/city aid. You know, the one thing that Republicans had heartache over the last couple of months was, for many Republicans, was the idea of bailing out, especially cities, where they feel mismanagement has run rampant for far too long, and all we're doing is we're pouring good money after bad. And so there will be a spirited argument about that, but frankly, you know, the cities of America, even if you're a Republican, we can't see America's cities in a rapid decline and feel that somehow we're isolated from the impact of that. We want a ship that is rising on all fronts. And to get there, we're going to have to make some concession on there. But the minimum wage, I think, is the Maginot line here. It's that bright red line where they're just not going to cross that. And they have good reason not to. And then they can, in return,
we have to
save the American people. We're going to give you more in terms of individual stimulus checks to make you whole.
We're going to have to leave it there. And I dare I say, I cannot wait to have both of you back on and Adam to pick your brain about the 2024 implications of the last week. Because I remember in 2016 when Jeb Bush was the presumed front runner of the Republican Party. And what did the upstart do, Donald Trump? Attack the front runner. And so I think there could be a vacuum of an opportunity for an outsider, new type of governor, Republican to come out and just start saying, it's time to move on. It's time to move on. It's time to move on. My thanks to Jeannie Sean Zeno, as well as Adam Goodman, for joining me. And of course, to Congresswoman Nancy Mace. I'm Kevin Cirilli. This is Bloomberg.